This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody. This is Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. Every week we're here talking about the disease of addiction. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We'll have more about them straight ahead. But today we begin with something we do frequently on the program, and that's bring you a first-person account of what the disease of addiction means to people who suffer it, the struggles they endure, and very hopefully find their way to a sober condition. Millions of people get healthy and wind up living in long-term successful recovery. We find it important here on the program to remind people of that. So this week, again, we reach into Retreat's growing a very robust and very helpful alumni organization. And we'll tell you about what they're dedicated to as well with regard to the entire process of staying sober. There are upwards of 20 million people living in long-term successful sobriety. Today we have another of those stories. Arielle Baker is 25 years old and has had a battle with substance abuse for many years, in and out of treatment, and now successfully completing 16 and a half months of sobriety. She's here to tell us her story. Arielle Baker, welcome to Recovery Radio. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, I got that right. I don't want to ever mistake anybody's anniversary dates. 16 and a half months sober, right?
Yep.
Terrific. Congratulations. So
thank you.
We want to tell people the story of how you managed to get at the point you are right now. So let's begin at the beginning. Tell us about Arielle Baker. Where are you from?
I'm from Duncannon, PA. I was born in Harrisburg.
And tell me about your family. You have siblings?
I was raised by my grandparents. My parents are around, but they kind of stepped in when I was younger and raised me. My parents were never really together. I have a half-brother that I share with my dad. But, my childhood was pretty normal. I did sports. Was a Girl Scout, stuff like that. I've lived with my grandparents my whole life.
How would you, so your childhood was normal in every sense, in every kind of sense?
Yeah, definitely, because, there was my grandpa and grandma were there in the household, and, we would eat dinner at the table together, we would go on family vacations. I was kind of spoiled when I was younger, so, anything that I needed or wanted, they would provide me with, you know what I mean? They were essentially my mom and dad when my parents couldn't be there.
We like to get to these kind of mundane and ordinary descriptions of people's childhood because we know with this disease there's all kinds of co-occurring things that can impact the disease of addiction. But very often they are not there. People come from the kind of background you're talking about. So there's no trauma in your childhood or anything that might have directly contributed to a substance problem.
I don't believe so, but, looking back, not having my parents there, it might have bothered me a little bit, like elementary school, middle school, because, all my friends, they had their parents there at every school event, you know what I mean? And, I had my grandparents, so, it was a little bit different, mm-hmm. but, there was no, trauma as far as physical abuse or mental abuse, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I had a pretty normal childhood other than not having my parents around all the time.
Was there any history, now that you look back, of substance abuse in your family that you were aware of growing up?
My dad was addicted to cocaine when I was a baby. I'd say maybe up until I was 3 or 4 years old. He's been clean for many years now, but my grandparents have never touched a drink. They never touched a drug. My mother, she's a social drinker, but there's in my immediate family, other than my dad and his family, there's no substance abuse.
So what kind of kid were you growing up?
I was pretty happy, honestly. Like, I mean, like I said, I got anything that I wanted or needed. I was a little bit spoiled, and that kind of came to bite me in the butt later on. But, like, honestly, I was really happy, and, like, you know, I had a lot of friends. I did soccer, softball. You know, I was involved in, like, school, after-school programs. I was happy, you know. Like, I would love to go to the beach with my family. And I like to paint a lot. I still like to paint. But, yeah, I mean, I did everything that a normal, you know, kid would have done at that age.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your introduction to drugs or alcohol. When did you start experimenting?
I started drinking around 14 regularly, but I remember my first drink ever was a Mike's Hard Lemonade, and I was at a barbecue with my mom and her friends, like, from work, and I told my mom that I wanted to try some, and she let me at, like, age 12. So that was kind of crazy, but, like, you know, I really didn't start drinking every weekend or whatever until I was 14, and that was because I was introduced to, like, a new area, new surroundings, new people, because, you know, I was raised in Perry County with my grandparents. So Harrisburg is in Dauphin County, and it's, like, the city, you know. It's, like, you know, there's a lot going on, there's a lot more things to do. Like, Perry County is, like, out in the middle of the woods, you know. Like, we really are kind of sheltered here. So, you know, when I got, you know, kind of acclimated to, like, the city and, like, new people, like, it was just something totally new and different to me. So you know, I wanted to, like, fit in, I wanted to, like, you know, get new friends, and I thought that, you know, I found that in, like, older people that drank and, you know, like, to party all the time, and I thought that was genuine fun. So I did that for a while, almost my whole high school career. I started at 14, and then I kind of stopped around, I want to say, maybe 20.
Yeah. So that period of time you characterized as fitting into a new environment and trying to find out, you know, who your circle of friends should be and what your behavior should correspond to sounds pretty typical. Lots of those people were doing the same thing. How would you characterize your behavior as opposed to theirs? When did yours accelerate beyond this kind of social fitting in effort?
Well, I mean, the reason I should explain why I was trying to fit in, like, you know, I'm mixed. So my mom is white, my dad is black, and, like, you know, where I live, it's predominantly white people. And, you know, I felt like I really didn't fit in around this area. You know, when I started going to Harrisburg, I would hang out with a whole bunch of different type of people. And I felt like they accepted me, you know, for who I was. And I kind of, like, you know, I didn't have to feel like I was that, like, oddball out. So, you know, when they introduced me to, you know, like, alcohol and everything, you know, it was fine at first. You know, it would only be on the weekends, and, you know, I kind of knew when to stop because I would start getting sick, and, you know, I would just stop at that. But then, you know, it progressed pretty quickly. I mean, I would start, you know, blacking out and just doing crazy things that I wouldn't remember. And, you know, I would just keep going. Like, I didn't know when to stop.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, other people that I was hanging out with, you know, they would be able to have, like, three drinks, feel a little, you know, tipsy and just stop for the night. Like, me, I had noticed at a certain point that I just kept going until I couldn't go anymore.
And when you noticed that your behavior was, you were going harder than your peers, did it scare you? Did it trouble you? What did you think about that?
I mean, a part of me was, like, excited, you know what I mean? It was, like, one of those things where it just, like, took me out of myself, and, like, I didn't have to, like, you know, worry about home problems. I didn't have to worry about, like, fitting in high school. Like, I was, like, out doing, like, these new and exciting things, and, like, I wasn't worried about it. I mean, I was, like, a fresh, like, teenager, you know, 14 and 15, and I had that mentality, like, I really, you know, don't care at this point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it didn't seem to be a problem for you.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
'Cause I thought I could stop at any time.
Yeah. So What did it accelerate to? Take me through the kind of progression. You begin drinking, and was marijuana involved early on?
Yeah, it was. I would, smoke weed with my friends every now and then around town where I live. That weed was never really my thing, but there was a certain turning point in my drinking career in the beginning, because I would get really wasted and really messed up with these new friends of mine, and all of a sudden they brought out weed, and it was dipped in it was PCP. It was dipped in bombing fluid. So, they told me that it was regular weed, and I'd be fine. So that was the new thing, where I would get drunk and then they would have me, smoke that. And that was really scary for me, because I'd never tried any serious drug before. But, when I was drunk, it was anything was good to go. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, in spite of the fact that this was dangerous stuff, this marijuana laced with embalming fluid, it didn't
say, yeah, that was, it was bad.
It didn't put the brakes on for you.
No, it didn't. It should have.
Yeah. One of the things people don't like to admit, and I wonder whether you thought about this or much talk about, is that one of the reasons people get high, even when it's a problem, because they like being high. I mean,
yeah.
Was that where you were at? You just liked the feeling of being high.
Right. And like I said, it definitely took me out of myself, and I kind of I was the person that everyone else wanted me to be. I could fit in with any crowd and be bubbly and be outgoing, whereas when I wasn't on any substance, I felt like I was shy and I didn't fit in, and I just didn't, I felt like I didn't belong to anywhere or to anybody, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ariel Baker's 25 years old. She joins us today on Recovery Radio to talk about her many years of struggling with substances that begin, as she's just described, as sort of useful experimentations and then become a way of life and ultimately a big problem. Ariel Baker is now 16 and a half months sober. We're going to find out about that journey to sobriety straight ahead with her. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. We have more. Welcome back. This is Recovery Radio. Our guest on the phone is Ariel Baker. Ariel is a member of the Retreats alumni group. She's here telling us about her years of struggling with substance abuse and how she managed sobriety at last. 16 and a half months of sobriety, as a matter of fact. So Ariel, the description of your youthful drug use, and you're young now, you were young when you started, sounds very typical. A lot of people do the same thing. Not all of them wind up where you did. So take us through this progression as you keep stepping up your use of substances. The laced marijuana led to, and the drinking led to what?
Essentially, it led me to Percocet first. I remember the first time that I ever tried a pill, it was 6 months after I had my son. He'll be six next week now. So, at this point in my life, I kind of stopped drinking as much. I was 19. I had my own place. I was engaged. I had just graduated Kaplan Career Institute. I went to go get my medical assistant diploma, and everything was going great in my life. I had everything together. So after I had my son, I had, my first girls' night out, after, not being able to drink and everything throughout my whole pregnancy. So, we had met up at my apartment, and, my friend, my best friend, actually, she had been on pills for a while, and I didn't know it, but she was like, well, if you want to have extra fun tonight, we could do this. And I'm like, I don't know, I've never tried something like that before, but I wanted to fit in. So I did that with her. I snorted that pill, and that night, it seems corny, but I compare it to when Bill Wilson says in The Big Book about I had arrived. You know what I mean? It took me out of myself, and I had a blast that night. And from there, it was just I did it every other week, and then it just progressed. And and then I woke up one morning sick, and I didn't understand why I was feeling the way I was feeling. It was because I didn't have any pills in my system. So, you know, I called my friend up and I'm like, you know, why am I feeling like this? Like, and she was like, oh, you're just withdrawing. It's fine. You know, come over. We'll go, you know, get more pills. It's fine. So, and then the pills became too expensive. And then I had talked to a friend from high school and he was on heroin and he, you know, said, you know, I don't know why you're spending so much money on these pills when you could be spending such and such on a bag of heroin and, you know, we'll go to Harrisburg and we'll get some. So that's kind of like, and literally I was only on pills for maybe, I'd say about 3 or 4 months and, it quickly like progressed to heroin.
Yeah. It's amazing how, your friends can wind up doing more damage than your enemies.
Right. I've always been easily influenced by my friends.
And you also had the tough break of having, I guess, been surrounded by a lot of people that had a lot of answers for you if the questions were, how do I keep getting high without getting sick?
Right.
You didn't have any trouble getting heroin. Did you begin shooting it up intravenously right away, or was that a progression as well?
That was like a somewhat slow but quick progression. I started snorting it, and then I didn't actually start using a needle until after my first or second trip to rehab, because, you know, like meeting all these people that I did, you know, it was hard for me to separate the people that were serious about recovery and then people that were, you know, on the edge, like not really sure. So someone had introduced me to using a needle later on.
Right. Before we get into the nitty gritty of in and out of the treatment, this notion of this progression, did it ever occur to you at any point along this line that you were going too far? A lot of people don't understand why folks who get high and like it continue to step it up. I mean, after you try heroin for the first time, what is there, a sense that there's no going back?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, once I, you know, kept doing it and I was doing it on an everyday basis, you know, I just didn't want to be sick. I know what that felt like. I knew what it felt like, and I just didn't want to go back. And it was just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's too late now, and I really didn't know what to do. I didn't want to tell anyone. I couldn't tell my family, of course. I was so afraid of what they would say. And, you know, my fiance at the time, he had noticed some things, and, you know, he would, you know, make little comments here and there. But
you were able to hide all this behavior from your fiance and your family?
Yeah, I was. I essentially started like isolating myself and, you know, putting on that front like everything was fine. I mean, it wasn't until later on where I started, you know, losing jobs and not being able to pay my bills where people started, you know, like questioning and, you know, raising eyebrows, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what were the circumstances that got you to your first treatment facility or effort to get clean?
Well, my fiance had really started pushing the issue. You know, like we had started, you know, at first he didn't want to lose me, so he didn't mean to, but really he started to enable me because he didn't want the relationship to end. He wanted our family together. You know, he wanted to be that dad to our son, and you know, he wanted to support me in everything that I did, but, you know, he knew it was wrong, but he didn't want our family to be broken up. But, you know, eventually it became a huge issue, to where, you know, I had gotten, I went to jail, cause I started stealing stuff from stores and returning it to get money for heroin. And, you know, then that's when my family found out and he came clean to them about everything. And, you know, my dad being, you know, in recovery from cocaine, like, you know, he said about rehab. So we started looking into places. And actually, a place had referred me to Retreat. So that's how I found out about them. And, I went there for the first time in 2015.
All right. We're going to pick up the story of that wasn't your last trip to rehab, of course. We'll pick it up when we come back. Ariel Baker, our guest on Recovery Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Back to our guest, Ariel Baker, straight ahead. But first, a reminder of Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. I'm going to give you their phone number, and I tell you every week, I hope you never have to use it. And so do the people at Retreat, as a matter of fact, which might sound odd. I mean, after all, they are a world-class treatment facility center. They've helped lots and lots of people. But they sponsor this program as an informational tool. They want to spread the word about the disease of addiction, and they want you to be armed with as much information as you can get. That's what this program's about. I give you their phone number. They will answer any questions, any at all, about this disease or the treatment or how to pay for it or where to get it, that they can. And if they can help you, and as I said, they've helped lots and lots of people, they certainly are ready to do that. But again, the number is one that, if you need it, because this disease often arrives almost always unannounced, you're gonna need to know where to turn to get really good information. So please jot the number down. And again, I hope you don't need it. 855-859-8808. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Center is 855-859-8808. Ariel Baker, our guest, she's telling us about her story. We like to bring these voices in recovery to people to remind you that as difficult as this disease is, as is apparent by the news of the way this epidemic is ravaging the country, people can get sober. Ariel is now 6.5 months clean, and she's telling us how she's managing that right now. So, Ariel, the wheels come off. You know, you've been hiding this fairly well, high functioning, but you're jammed up behind the law. The family finds out. Treatment is what they demand of you, and you get yourself to your first treatment facility. What was your attitude going in that first time?
I really didn't know what to expect. I was really nervous, being away from my son, with him being, you know, so young. I was pretty nervous and scared, and, you know, I'm like, what if he forgets about me? You know, what if?
Let me stop you right there and ask the question that people are thinking. If your concern for your son was so obvious to you, then why wasn't it enough to get you to stop? Just stop before it got this bad.
You know, I justified and rationalized a lot, you know, with me using, you know, I was still in his life, you know what I mean? I was there every day to see him off to daycare and be there for him. You know, even though I was under the influence, I was still there in his life. So, you know, I was, you know, saying like, well, at least I'm not doing it in front of him. At least I'm not putting him in dangerous situations, things like that. So, you know, I was, even though, you know, it just still gave me no right to be high around him, I was still there in his life every day. He would see me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Again, you didn't know what to expect at that rehab. What happened?
Well, I went in. Of course, I was, you know, under the influence because my friends had told me again, you know, they steered me in, you know, what to do. I went in under the influence, and, you know, I was just scared, honestly. It was like, you know, a fish out of water. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was going to happen. But, you know, the people that Retreat are, like, so friendly. And, you know, it's a really, like, one big family there. And I felt, you know, I honestly felt after that first initial shock of, like, you know, being away from my, you know, natural and comfortable surroundings, like, after that initial first couple days, I felt like I was at home. I felt like, you know, people understood what I was going through because I know my family, you know, with no experience of drug addiction or anything, you know, these people actually understood what I was going through.
Were you detoxed in that first treatment?
Yeah, it took me a while, actually. I mean, you know, coming off of so much heroin, I think I was detoxed after maybe 10 days or so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was the detox situation like for you, for people who don't know what that's like?
It was horrible, honestly. You know, it took me, it was like a big, it was like fog. It was like this thick fog. I was in this haze for so many days. I just felt like, I literally felt like I couldn't think straight. Mm-hmm. It was hard for me to get up and, you know, go to groups and be a part of the actual program. It was a bad detox.
And when the detox, when your mind clears and the fog lifts, you start Did you start buying into the program, or what was your attitude?
Well, you know, I had my counselor. She was younger, so it was kind of easy to talk to her. And you know, she had explained, you know, the program, and I had never heard anything about AA or NA before. You know, but she, you know, said how it was important to basically, like, you know, she explained to me that, like, getting clean was like learning how to live again. And I needed to, like, you know, learn about myself, learn about, you know, like, triggers and everything like that. And I had no idea what a trigger was. I had no idea about anything. But she had, you know, had told me that, you know, I had a lot of learning to do. And, you know, once I really started, like, yeah, I had to have the willingness, first of all. I mean, once I really became willing to, like, you know, actually be open-minded, I think that's when, you know, I started to let a little bit of information sink in.
And during this period of time, were you thinking, now you're detoxed, you're starting to listen to information during treatment, are you still thinking about getting high?
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about it. Almost every day. And, you know, you have those people in treatment where they're not sure either. So, you know, you have people leaving AMA, you know, on a regular basis. And, you know, I had, like I said, I had to, like, kind of weed out the people that were serious and not serious and know who I shouldn't hang out with.
Yeah. So after that first stint in rehab, how soon after you got out did you relapse?
Well, I was clean for 79 days, and I had went to Florida after my first trip to retreat, which was amazing. It was an awesome experience. You know, I think that taking me away from, you know, my comfortable surroundings and my environment, it really did help me. But once I came back, it was like it automatically clicked in my head where, you know, like it was just that familiarity, and I just jumped right back into, you know, doing bad things and hanging out with bad people.
Where was your fiance and child during that period?
Well, my son, my grandparents started taking care of him, and me and my fiance had kind of, you know, we didn't like officially break up, but we, you know, kind of took a step back from each other because I had realized that, you know, my using and everything had really took a toll on him. And going down to Florida, he wasn't expecting that at all. So, you know, he kind of thought that I wasn't worried about our relationship. And, you know, some families and, you know, significant others, they don't understand sometimes that, you know, we need as much time as we need to try to get better. And, yeah, he wasn't having any of that. So when I went down to Florida, he didn't really call it quits, but, you know, we just took a step back from each other for a while.
Yeah. So altogether now, how many times do you return to treatment?
Well, I'm pretty sure I went back to retreat at least six more times, and I went back and forth to Florida three separate times.
And again, the relapse occurs very rapidly after you get out. Why do you suppose that was?
Because, you know, like they say that the, like, relapse is like a part of recovery, and I mean, it doesn't have to be, but that's definitely a part of my story. And, you know, I thought I could just like jump back into life without learning anything about myself and about a program. Because essentially, like, I didn't know who I was. I'd been using for so many years, and drugs and alcohol made me, like, you know, the person that I wanted to be, and everyone, you know, I wanted everyone to see that person. But, you know, like, I was trying to, like, you know, learn about myself, and, you know, like, being sober, like, and having all those emotions come back, it was pretty overwhelming, you know, and I had a huge problem with projecting as well, and, like, worrying about the future, like, you know, what if I can't stay sober, what if things never fall into place, what if I can't, you know, gain the trust back from my family, you know, what if, but when they tell you, like, literally, like, one day at a time, like, they mean that. And, like, you know, that's another thing. Like, my family just, like, didn't understand. And, like, you know, I put them through the ringer. I put them through so much. And, I mean, it definitely is, like, a family disease. But, you know, when I got sober, I just couldn't it was pretty overwhelming. Like, I couldn't stand the person that, you know, I was, because without a program, I still had that addict mentality.
Yeah.
And my emotions pretty much overwhelmed me.
I think another thing people who look at this disease from the outside can't quite appreciate is that for people who are multiple relapsing until they begin to work programs and get healthy, it's easier, safer, less scary to be high than it is to be sober, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So when do you suppose, if ever, a light went on and you started going, you know what, this is a cycle I've got to break? Do you remember when that happened for you?
I essentially like needed that like gift of desperation. And, you know, like I said, I put my family through so much, and I was just like tired. I was like physically, emotionally, like mentally, like just tired of the cycle. I mean, honestly, the light went off just recently, like when I got clean, you know, 16 months ago. It just had went off that I'm tired of living this way, because I have so much potential, and people tell me I have so much potential, but I never saw that. I never had that like hope and everything else, and really like that hope is what has got me through. Because I did not see any hope for me in the future, but I just needed that. Like I was at the bottom, and I was like at my rock bottom, and I was just tired of the way I was living.
Yeah, the among the many things horrible about the disease of addiction is that while the bottom is different for everybody, doesn't have to be the lowest of lows, but it has to be a certain point where it has beaten you down so much that you decide enough is enough. Ariel Baker,
right.
Our guests, we will come back with Ariel in the final segment and find out, you know, what her hopes are now that as she, you know, clearly struggles to maintain her sobriety, and find out what her hopes for the future are. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano is who I am. I hope you're finding us here on Saturdays talking about the disease of addiction. Whole thing sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Even if this show does not relate to anything you know in your life, I'm sure you know somebody who may need this kind of information. Tell us we're here. We're really trying to get this message to as many people as we can. There is help out there. Ariel Baker found help after multiple trips in and out of rehab. She's just 25 years old, but has struggled with substance abuse up to and including heroin use for many years now, until finally getting sober 16 and a half months ago. So Ariel, it's a long time, your longest stretch now in sobriety. What's it like for you on a one day at a time basis? I mean, is it a struggle to stay sober?
I mean, not every day is a cakewalk, you know, like keeping busy is what helps me so much. And like, if I can just do anything to keep me out of my own head, cause you know, it can be pretty dark in there. Like, yeah, I heard this guy say at this meeting before, you know, like me being in my head is like being in a bad neighborhood alone at night, you know, and I could totally relate to that. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm my worst enemy. And like, if I can just like do something every day that like either I'm helping someone else or like I'm trying to stay focused on one thing and like, you know, just positive vibes, you know what I mean? And just trying to work towards the future and, you know, focusing on my program too. That's the most important thing.
Well, so what is your program right now? Your ongoing efforts. What do you do?
Well, I go to a meeting every day. I work AA. I do have a little bit experience in NA. You know, everybody's different. But I do AA, and I work the 12 steps with my sponsor. And I meet up with her at least once a week, and I call her every other day. And that really helps too, to like reach out to another addict and like, you know, have someone actually listen and relate and give you like great feedback. And, you know, if my sponsor's never sure about what to do, she calls her sponsor. Like, and that's what the program is about. Like having a great like support system and just being able to, you know, connect to people that understand.
Well, it's interesting to hear you describe it that way because, you know, if you look at the disease, you find out that it takes a village to cure this thing for sure. You have switched from a situation where your support network was dedicated to helping you get high. You always had someone you could call who would, you know, tell you what to do and where to go get it and how to use it, to a support system that just tells you the opposite of that. That's pretty much what's going on, right?
Right, because essentially, I mean, before when I had, you know, those friends that were getting high, I would put so much effort into, you know, being, you know, fake best friends with somebody just so I could get what I needed. That was so easy for me. But like when I got clean, first couple times, and, you know, trying to reach out to someone and being honest with another addict was like so hard for me. But, you know, like now I can open up and I can be honest about the way I'm feeling, because that's like, honesty is key. Like if I get all those secrets out to my sponsor, and, you know, it's really freeing. It really is. And, you know, and if you think that, you know, they would look at you differently or judge you, that's like highly unlikely. You know, there's nothing that, you know, my sponsor or anyone else in the program, you know, we have heard some crazy things. So it's like, you know, being open and honest with someone else, like, has really helped me a lot.
What's your relationship with your family like these days?
You know, it's getting there. It's not perfect, but, you know, it's an ongoing thing, you know. I every day, like, as long as I, you know, talk to them and let them know what's going on, just doing anything differently than how I used to do it. You know, I don't want to be secretive anymore. I want to be, you know, open with them and tell them what's going on in my life. And, you know, just being there, like, means a lot to them too, because, you know, I was so unreliable in the past. Like, I couldn't be trusted. They would always have to keep tabs on me. But, you know, like, now, I tell them what's going on, and, you know, they're very supportive. Like, they don't want to see me, you know, do bad. You know, they really want the best for me.
Mm-hmm. And your relationship with your child?
It's great. He's the greatest kid that I could have ever asked for. You know, he always sticks up for me no matter what. And, you know, he's such a great kid. And, you know, getting that relationship back is, like, really what's most important to me, because, you know, I brought him into this world. And, like, that's my responsibility. Of course, I need to look out for myself first so I can be there for him. But, you know, like, just being able to be with him and being involved in, you know, his school and, you know, his soccer practice, his, you know, T-ball, like, you know, that's really, it's yeah. Awesome. It's really important to me.
T-ball can drive a lot of parents crazy. In your case, it may help you get, may help you stay sober. Ariel, thank you so much. I know you wanted to mention why you wanted to do this interview.
Well, you know, essentially, like, I really, nowadays, like, in this point in my recovery, I just really, like, want to help the next addict who is either still suffering or is trying to be in recovery or in recovery, you know, because I was, like, putting off so much negativity in my using days, and now I just want to, you know, do positive things and, you know, give off positive vibes and, like, just really help someone. You know, I'm hoping that I said something today that someone could at least, you know, relate to, and, you know, something can click in someone else's head to where, you know, they can relate to it, and they can, you know, go from there and do with what they want with the information, and, you know, either get help or just, you know, reaching out is really the first step and trying to get better.
What do you want for the future?
For my future, you know, I have a lot of, like, hopes and dreams and goals. I essentially, like, happiness is really important. And, you know, I can't get that and keep that unless I'm sober. Mm-hmm. And like I said, every day is not perfect, but, you know, I want to be a helpful person. I want to go back to school. I want to be able to sponsor someone someday. You know, I want to own my own home. There's just so many things I want to do. But like I said, if I'm not sober, none of those things can be achieved.
Ariel, thanks so much. You sound great. Continued success with the sobriety. And we'll see you, because we know you're part of the alumni group, which is a great organization here at Retreat. So good luck, and thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Everybody, take care. Thanks for joining us this week, and look for us next. This is Recovery Radio. Enjoy the weekend.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.